of social media and tell your friends about Democracy Now!, people-powered media. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Perk, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Nardina Guzder, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura, and Andre Lewis, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, and Paul Huckabee are our engineers. Special thanks and happy birthday to Becca Staley. Also thanks to Miriam Barnard, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, David Prude, Ariel Boone, Vestica Dars, Anthony Manzo, and to our camera crew, John Randolph, Kieran Krugmeadows, Anna Osbeck, and Matt Ealy. Our website, again, is democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
HeyBoo Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Full Gallop, produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs through Saturday, October 8th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza in Portland. Full Gallop is a portrait of Diana Vreeland, who stood at the center of American style for 5 decades. As editor of Harper's Bazaar and Vogue magazines and as a member of the International Cafe Society, she chronicled the extraordinary people and events of her time. This play is a portrait of Vreeland at a turning point in her life. Again, that's Full Gallop, now through October 8th, at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, Sex and Broadcasting, will play Thursday, October 13th at 7 p.m. Sex and Broadcasting is a documentary about the revolutionary independent radio station WFMU and its station manager, Ken Friedman. The film explores the question of how to do interesting, cool, culturally significant radio and internet broadcasting while being a sustainable institution.
I just want there to be a WFMU. I want WFMU to exist as a place where people can go who don't fit in, where people can go to find things that have been hidden.
Again, that's Sex and Broadcasting, Thursday, October 13th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, accessories, and gifts with a focus on U.S.-made and certified fair trade natural fiber clothing since 1984. Gazelle is located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at gazellenaturalfiberclothing.com.
Visit American City, you will find it very pretty. Just two things of which you must beware: don't drink the water and don't breathe the air. Pollution, pollution, we got smog and sewage and mud. Turn on your tap and get hot and cold running.
Yes, indeed, Tom Lehrer from way back in the 60s, kind of a bit of a high-spirited tune for such a grim subject. It's almost kind of too light for the reality of what's happening with the air and water here in Portland and all over the place. But Portland has this, it kind of goes with the image of Portland, I think. By the way, you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Paul Rowland, and that was Tom Lehrer with his famous song, to those of us of a certain generation, Pollution. And I'm here to talk about what's going on with toxic air and water here in Portland, Oregon, the touted livable city. And so I'm here with Jessica Applegate with the Portland East Side.
East Side Portland Air Coalition.
East Side Portland Air Coalition. And Paul Koberstein with Cascadia Times, and currently been writing a series of really excellent investigative articles for Portland Tribune. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Paul.
And I just blanked on your last name because we haven't really met formally. Greg?
Bourget.
Bourget. And you're with?
I'm with Portland Clean Air.
And what is Portland Clean Air?
We're an organization that's working in three counties to address air pollution, industrial air pollution here.
And how long have you been around?
3 years.
3 years. And your group is just recent, Jessica, because this whole bullseye thing just kind of, I guess, sprang out of almost nowhere, it seemed like, to the general public, although people in the area of bullseye have been having at least intimations of that for quite a while.
Right. We are a group that really, kind of a pop-up activist group, if you will. We formed and created a coalition early on in February when the bullseye news broke. And the core group of us have been doing activist work for over 20 years. So we don't have an official organization for activism, but we kind of pop up together naturally when issues arise like bullseye.
And the immediate reason why we're having this program is because today in Portland, there will be a rally for clean air from 5 to 6 p.m. at the Oregon Convention Center, which is down there on MLK, about 6 blocks north of Burnside. Everybody knows those famous glass towers. That's and it's before the final statewide Cleaner Air Oregon Public Forum from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Oregon Convention Center. So I'm going to read a little bit about that. Co-hosts of this event are Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, Northeast Coalition Neighborhoods, Northwest Environmental Defense Center, Craig Law Center, Beyond Toxics, Opal Environmental Justice Oregon, South Portland Air Quality, Eastside Portland Air Coalition, North Portland Air Quality, Neighbors for Clean Air, and 350 PDX. Bunch of speakers. They're going to be talking about Oregon's lax air quality regulations, enforcing only the bare minimum technology-based standards, which have led to Oregon's breathing some of the dirtiest air in the country. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. And we're going to be talking about water as well, because for one thing, what goes up must come down. And one of the major polluters in Southeast Oregon, Precision Castparts, has also been dumping vast amounts of toxic waste into Johnson Creek for many years, which Paul Koberstein has been writing about. So people are invited to come to that event and meet the people you're going to be hearing here and other people involved in this issue. And I think you can maybe still testify at this thing. Do you know if you can still sign up?
There will be. You can go online and sign up for the forum. They want you to RSVP, but I'm sure you can just show up. And at the end, there will be a public comment period.
Okay. So if you've been involved in this and haven't heard about it, there's also a Facebook page for this rally for clean air. I'm sure you can find all these links on my program page for this program at kboo.fm. So, I know you've been on KBOO before, and I know you've been talking about this a lot, Jessica. The bullseye thing really got me personally, because I just have a thing for that neighborhood, because People's Food Stores has been a real, just a center point for me for life in Portland as being, I just love food co-ops. I'm a sucker for the old counterculture, which I think food co-ops still have a lot of. Sunflower Recycling, where I worked for several years, was just right up the street there from Bullseye. I used to take loads of our clearest transparent glass on our forklift down to Bullseye. This is around 1989-90. Felt so good doing that. It was a real local thing to do.
Right.
Felt very virtuous, and didn't have any clue about Bullseye at the time. And I liked that neighborhood, and must have been just the most incredible shock to people who've been growing gardens there, who've been growing families there, to just find out that this company, this art glass company, has been toxifying the environment for decades.
Oh, it really was. I think for our community, it was just a real sense of betrayal, because we're all under this illusion living in Portland, the Emerald City, the greenest city possibly in the country. We're under this illusion that everything is okay. And realizing that Bullseye was virtually unregulated, and to know everything they were doing was perfectly legal, was astounding to me. That And I realized that we need to have real regulatory change, not just for Bullseye or Southeast, but for the entire state. Because if this can happen in Southeast, you know it's happening everywhere. It's happening in every community. And it was a real sense of betrayal and outrage that we all felt, and we just quickly organized and really did that community-based organizing where we already had pre-existing relationships and trust built in, and we were able to mobilize from, you know, 0 to 11 in about a week. And I'm hoping that all that work will help to create the statewide regulatory reform to capture these smaller polluters that currently, the way DEQ is structured, all of these smaller polluters are creating the vast majority of our air toxics, and they are virtually unregulated, even though they hold a permit. And Oregon is, there's something I think in the DEQ called the Oregon Way, which is terminology for basically polluters are allowed to voluntarily, you know, conform to regulations, and none of us are voluntarily allowed to go through DEQ, right, for our cars. So it just kind of seems backwards.
It is somewhat bizarre.
Yeah, yeah. So we're hoping that through the Cleaner Air Oregon regulatory overhaul, a lot of these things can be addressed so this doesn't happen again and continue to happen like what happened with Bullseye recently.
Well, you'd mentioned just before we went on the air that you're part of this Cleaner Air Oregon Advisory Committee appointed by the governor just recently. We'll get into that a little bit later into the program. But so you know, I know there's I'm sort of just getting up to speed a little bit in this issue. I'm kind of the way I do this show, I'm a bit of a generalist. So I'm really glad that there's specialists out there working on all these different issues that I can bring in, and other talk show hosts at KBOO and other programs can bring in to get into the depth of these issues that you have to, and that people can devote time to understanding the bureaucracy and going through all these, mm-hmm. you know, difficult hoops that it takes to get anything done at all, if you can. But I know that there's groups that have been working on these issues for a long time. I know ESCO in Northwest Portland has been pumping vast amounts of heavy metals and other toxics into the environment, and people have been, I guess that's Neighbors for Clean Air, has been mm-hmm. working on that for a long mm-hmm. time, and you know, having some successes and probably beating their heads against the wall. But it seems like, from what I'm understanding, that for whatever combination of circumstances, what happened with Bullseye just sort of broke this kind of open a little bit. Is mm-hmm. that the feeling you have?
Yeah, I know there's been a lot of work done, especially in the past six or 7 years, and it really was the perfect storm in a way. You know, we had the Moss study, which was an incredible piece of this, but then we also had some really good investigative journalism who, you know, like Daniel Forbes from the Mercury, really willing to stick his neck out and do that deep dive and really hold DEQ accountable and put Bullseye under the microscope. And then you had, you know, our community group and our organizing and this kind of pre-existing landscape for just Insta activism when needed. And then definitely on the back of other people that have been doing the work, I've been most impressed with all the groups, but I'm really appreciating the work of Beyond Toxics. They've been around for a very long time. They're Eugene-based, and then we've been working closely with Portland Clean Air, who's done a lot of incredible work and data, and as well as other groups like Neighbors for Clean Air and other groups.
Yeah, shout out to the Mercury. They don't have a lot of articles. They don't have a lot of space devoted to investigative journalism, but they do have some, they do stick after stories, and they do, in the absence of perhaps the Oregonian covering a lot of stuff. But the Portland Tribune over the past few years has really been stepping up. I got to say, I'm really impressed. There's a Steve Law and Budnick.
Yeah, Nick Budnick.
Nick Budnick and you now. When did you start writing for the Tribune?
I've been doing stories off and on for the last 2 or 3 years. Uh-huh. But this year
is Paul Koberstein you're hearing.
Thank you. This year I've been working pretty much exclusively on clean air and clean water issues related to precision cast parts, and it's kind of a never-ending job.
Well, you know, this article came out in March, must have been a big boost, you know, to the movement to make something happen on clean air. The air we breathe, dangerous contaminants found hovering over the city. You had that really exhaustive map that I think you helped put together, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That showed, you know, where are you safe from clean air? Possibly nowhere in Portland. Obviously, some places are probably better, like the, I don't know, some areas of the West Hills, maybe. I don't know where the best places to be free from the pollutants, but it, you know, there's a lot of hot spots. And Greg, I know you're going to get into some of the more specifics of it, but talk a little bit about getting in. What did you find out in doing that reporting, both on the air quality and on the specifically precision cast parts, which I know you've also talked about here on KBOO.
Sure. So big picture stuff here that, you know, you mentioned sustainability and Portland's eco green emerald reputation. A few years ago, the eco magazine Grist did a survey of the, it ranked the top cities in the world in terms of sustainability. And Reykjavik, Iceland, was number one. Portland, Oregon is number two. And they didn't realize that we had bad air here. And it was for a long time an issue for a small number of activists. And a few simmering hotspots for, you mentioned Esco. There's a tank farm of gasoline companies have stored all the state's entire gasoline supply is stored in Northwest Portland. And so there's a lot of pollution that has arisen from there. Chevron, there's a lawsuit that put some curbs on it in around 2001. But this issue has been simmering for quite a while. The DEQ has attempted kind of half-heartedly to address the issue. They had a program called the Portland Air Toxic Solutions Project, which was notable only because it came up with no solutions and wasted a lot of money and time and basically came down in favor of industry. So the DEQ has a pattern of failing to address this issue for a long time. So this year, when Bullseye popped, it changed things dramatically. The activism that arose from that issue was very effective. I've been covering the environment in the city for a long time, and I've never seen anything quite like it in terms of the energy, the activism, and the effectiveness. They've actually turned this entire issue around. And I think, you know, the DEQ is now looking like it will address these issues. So so I'm very hopeful what's in store for the city in terms of its environment. We might actually, at some point soon, rise to meet our reputation and become a sustainable city.
Well, yeah, let's, I guess, hold off on getting into more details into precision cast parts, which I know you've been doing a lot of reporting on. But let's just go to Greg, because that's a good jumping off point to, I mean, so what is it? Why, you know, these, you know, those of us who've been activists know well that those who are charged with, you know, supposedly regulating industry seem more intent on allowing industry to continue to pollute. So there's, you know, there's DEQ, Department of Environmental Quality for the state of Oregon, and then there's the Environmental Protection Agency at a national level, and I'm sure there's other. What, give us an overview of who is supposed to be guaranteeing air quality in the state of Oregon.
Looks like that's us. I think that's a common misconception. Yeah, I mean, after the tragic accident in Bhopal, India, laws were passed in, I believe, the 70s that gave individuals rights with industry. And the DEQ, sure, they should be regulating. But even in a situation in California, where in California you have a more ideal regulatory situation there. You know, you have some of the strongest air pollution laws in the country. You have stack monitors that are telling you real time on the internet what's going into the air. Diesel particulate is much lower because unfiltered diesel trucks are illegal you know, whereas in Oregon, you can run unfiltered diesel trucks. They're happening throughout the state, giving us some of the highest diesel particulate rankings in the country, which is the worst carcinogen in the United States.
So we have diesel trucks that are, maybe you can explain that, unfiltered, that are basically just running within the state of Oregon, and they can't cross over into...
Correct.
Say,
These are short-haul trucks, mostly running back and forth in Portland, giving a diesel particulate problem to downtown Portland, which is some of the worst in the nation. 1.8 micrograms per cubic liter, some of the highest modeling numbers in the country, according to the EPA. If you're living in California under these better rules, you still need to be involved as a citizen. You don't paint your house by hiring a contractor and have them come to your house, a trusted contractor. You don't throw them the keys and go on vacation, right? You have to be participating in your own life, even though you have experts helping you. The doctor doesn't tell you how to do the treatment. Essentially, you have to be involved. And in Portland, we failed to do so. We weren't involved. And the DEQ ran with that. They made a deal with industry, and they basically sold us out. And we have to get back involved. And, you know, we hold the power here. And so, yeah, I think we're the ones that are responsible.
So tell us about your work with Portland Clean Air. What have you been focusing on?
Well, when we got into this, we wanted to know some basic questions. We wanted to know who was being regulated, who was the industry putting the pollution into the air, and we wanted to know how much they're putting into the air. And what we realized is that, the information is not publicly available, even though it's public information. So we had to fight for it from five agencies. We had five agencies give us all their data. And even some of the agencies that gave it to us that were very cooperative, when they gave it to us, you had to be like Neo from the Matrix, you know, to look at this stuff and see something other than code. And so we had some people step forward. We have a person who's a data specialist, a data expert. We have a statistics specialist, and also a GIS, a Geographic Information System mapping director. And I work as a lead researcher. And so the team of the four of us and a bunch of other volunteers, we started to go through this data.
So you're an all-volunteer group?
We are.
Wow.
We pay our executive director, myself, barely anything. And then we have a bookkeeper we barely pay, and everyone else is volunteer. And so we started looking at the data. One of the startling things that we found is that the EPA ranked us as the worst American city for respiratory distress.
That needs to be emphasized. I mean, it still shocks me to hear that.
It's the national.
I just moved my mom out here from the East Coast.
Yeah, it is shocking that we'd be worse than LA or New York City. But that's the National Air Toxics Assessment that came out in December of 2015. Found that we were the worst for respiratory distress. For cancer risk, we were in the worst 1-2% nationwide. And so we started to look at, well, who's causing this? And we mapped out all the industries in Portland with these records. And one of the things that we're releasing on Monday is a shocking study about who's not even reporting their toxic chemical use. And I think that what happened with Bullseye. Bullseye is a good example because they're using, according to the DEQ, they were using 6,000 pounds of lead, cadmium, arsenic, and mercury that they're putting into an unfiltered furnace, of which about 5,000 pounds of those chemicals directly vaporized and went over the community for 42 years. They're not an anomaly. What we found was that of the chemicals being stored on site here in Portland, which we got from fire marshal records, of those that were on an industry that has to report their emissions, which has the ranking of, they have a specific permit called Title V from DEQ, those Title V industries that must report, which are called the big polluters by DEQ, they were housing on site just 5% of the dangerous hazardous chemicals in the city. 95% of the chemicals are held by what the DEQ calls smaller polluters. And these permit holders don't report their emissions. So the reason we didn't know about Bullseye is because we don't know about mostly any of the industries in Portland that emit chemicals. So if you're emitting lead, cadmium, mercury, formaldehyde, other dangerous and exotic chemicals that cause cancer or birth defects, we don't know what they're putting into the air because the DEQ doesn't keep records on it.
So you're listening to a special program here on toxic air and water in Portland, and I called it Enough's Enough Already, for all the good that will do. But And my name is Paul Rowland. I'm the host of Wednesday Talk Radio. The number to call in with your comments and questions is 503-231-8187. You just heard Greg Bourget with the Portland Clean Air. And you also heard Paul Koberstein with Cascadia Times, the editor of that. It used to be in print, but now it's just online, right?
We moved online in around 2009 because, you know, everybody else was. It's a lot cheaper to publish online. And, you know, we're like Portland Clean Air. We don't have a lot of money to pay our people. And so we can save money by publishing online.
And Jessica Applegate, we've been talking a lot about Bullseye because that's been in the news a lot recently. And it has, as we said, kind of helped bring this out into the public discourse, this issue. Again, 503-231-8187. That's the number to call in and join the conversation. And again, there's a rally to participate yourself, to get involved, meet some of the people involved in this work who are dedicating themselves. And there's also the statewide Cleaner Air Oregon Public Forum, the final public forum this evening at the Oregon Convention Center here in Portland, the 700 block of Northeast Martin Luther King Boulevard, those two pointy glass towers that are visible from many points in central Portland. And that forum is from 6 to 8 p.m. and the rally is from 5 to 6. So let's get into the precision cast parts issue. I don't know. To me, they're just such a symbol, you know, because you've got global militarism, you've got corporate power, you know, you've got a corporation. I guess they're the biggest or one of the biggest corporations that's based here in Portland, and they have immense power within the state of Oregon itself. Then you've got, you know, Johnson Creek, where, you know, millions and millions of dollars have been spent to, you know, bring back the salmon, this greenway, you know, on the one hand, you know, that image just has really stuck with me since I heard you on Joe Uris a few months ago. And I actually called in about this issue, you know, the right hand and the left hand, you got the public sector Portland, which has this reputation, which is, I think, deserved, you know, for being really innovative and visionary in uncovering some streams, in promoting bicycles, in a whole lot of good stuff, you know. But at the same time, you got all these bicyclists, you know, exercising their lungs and breathing this horrible air. And then you've got things like this vast amounts of public expenditures or large amounts going into rightfully, you know, bringing the biggest East Side Creek, you know, the biggest kind of greenway, natural area in east side of the river. And at the same time, you've got these huge corporations just pumping all these toxics into the creek at the same time. It seems schizoid to me.
Yeah, Johnson Creek is, I don't know, it's Portland's best kept secret, but it's a beautiful little creek. And it's 24 miles long, runs from Boring to Milwaukee, dumps into the Willamette River, and it's just heavily wooded. It's got the Springwater Corridor Trail. A lot of people use it. It's got some natural areas along the way. And in the middle, like 3 or 4 miles from the mouth, this company, Precision Cast Parts, has built a fairly large industrial campus, and they make parts for airplane engines. They, on their website, they say that every airplane in the sky has parts from Precision Cast Parts.
Which, of course, is the airline industry is one of the vast contributors towards global warming and toxics in the air, too. The amount of emissions are just stupendous.
Well, they certainly do have their impacts. And in January of this year, Warren Buffett, whom you probably know, his investment company, Berkshire Hathaway, purchased Precision Cast Parts for over $30 billion, which was their largest single investment in their history, which is pretty significant, I think. So this company makes, as I said, airplane engine parts. They also make artificial hips, medical devices of all kinds, and so on. If it's metal, if it's made out of titanium, which is an element, it makes it. And the process of making these things is a little bit of a dirty business. They have air pollution as well as water pollution. We did a study and looked at the National Air Toxic study that Greg was talking about. We looked at the data and saw a discernible, measurable cancer plume in the vicinity of this plant. It's at 46th and Harney is the address. And we could see from the data a measurable increase in projected cancer rates over the next 70 years of significantly higher than the neighborhoods around that site, Eastmoreland, Ardenwald, this area has, this toxic air. And then we looked at the water pollution. They had dumped a lot of chemicals into their sewer, and the sewer ran into the creek, and the creek was polluted with PCBs, chromium, nickel, zinc, some very nasty, nasty carcinogens and exotic chemicals that I cannot pronounce, but they're in there. And the DEQ has yet to clean it up, even though it's known about this pollution in there for several years. And the impacts, the health effects of these chemicals is measurable. It's significant.
And of course, there's obviously with big, rain events, flooding events, that a lot of the, I was told that a lot of that accumulates, in the top layers of the sediment, and then that gets flushed out. And so obviously it's, in addition to whatever remains in the creek, there's obviously contribution to the problems in the Willamette. And of course, the Willamette River is another one that's one of the most toxic in the country. We just seem to just be coming to the realization of all these different areas that are highly toxic in our wonderful city.
And of course, we're spending billions of dollars to clean up the Willamette in the Superfund site. And then we've done a lot of work in the past to clean up that river. It's been a sewer, basically. So last summer, we looked at the floodplain upstream from this company's plant and found an old garbage dump that had been, built before modern environmental standards were in effect. It was built on a floodplain. It was not lined with a barrier that could prevent the stuff in the landfill from leaking down into the groundwater. And we also found that Precision Castparts was sending stuff, nasty stuff, to this landfill after it closed, after its license expired. It did have a DEQ license. And so for several years after it was closed, this landfill was receiving waste from this company. And so we wanted to know what was going on here and why was the DEQ not paying any attention. And we still don't have any answers to that question, but we know that it has polluted the groundwater, and the groundwater is going into the creek. We don't know what the levels are, but the DEQ says they're looking into it, and we'll find out in a few weeks what they've determined.
Let's bracket that. That's something that was your most recent piece just last week in the Portland Tribune. People can go there and go to online, and you can pick up this paper all over town. I don't want to get a publicist for the Tribune, but I am impressed with some of the level that seems to be being raised in the last couple of years in the reporting in the Portland Tribune. So, credit where credit's due. But we do have a couple callers who are patiently waiting. First, I believe, is Janet. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi. I have been listening with great interest, and I would urge listeners to check out the toxic release inventory on the EPA.gov website. It has a real lot of information and great data. It breaks down the types of chemicals that are being released to the air, the water, or injected into the ground. And I actually did a search on the zip code for Bullseye Glass when the subject first came up, and found that Bullseye was not actually the worst offender in that zip code. There's another one. I'm afraid I'm not looking at it right now because I have to go to work. But there was another offender in the neighborhood that was releasing far worse and far much more quantity of pollutants into the, I believe it was the air. And I would urge you to check out that website. You can plug in your zip code. Now, last time I did try it, I did have some trouble, although it was on my mobile phone. So if the zip code doesn't work, you can still search by county, by city, and different ways of searching to get the data.
Okay. Well, let's hear a response from our guests.
The toxic release inventory of the EPA only covers Title V industries, and so they only house 5% of the chemicals used in Portland. Their industry that she's referring to is Picos Astronics, which was near Bullseye, but they were kicked out of the neighborhood several years ago by the city. They're putting out about 14,000 pounds of toluene. Bullseye was putting out lead.
How long were they allowed to?
Oh, for years, for many years. But the toluene is dangerous, but not in comparison to lead, cadmium, arsenic, and chromium, making Bullseye the worst polluter in that neighborhood. The toxic release inventory site is very well set up to look at just those Title V industries. However, because they vastly omit almost all industries, if you go to our website at portlandcleanair.org, you'll see a map there with every industry using toxic chemicals in Portland. It took us 3 years to get those records from five agencies so that people could, for the first time, find out who the industries were, all of them, by their house.
Okay, well, let's just go right to our next caller, Sylvia.
Yeah, good morning. My name is Sylvia. I come from a slightly different angle because I'm allergic to all the electronic pollution, so I can't deal with computers and all websites and all that kind of stuff. I just work directly with Mother Earth. I make rock people. I go down to talk about Johnson Creek. I live out in Gresham, and my biggest problem is with Metro, because Metro has systematically bought up all the land across along Johnson Creek, and the first thing they do is cut down a bunch of trees, dig up the ground, and they poison everything with all those poisons, and they do it more and more and more, and they do it all the way down to the water, and all the little wildlife, like the frogs, and everything is gone. I've argued with them, you know, they know me by now because they see me. You know, I just deal with people face to face. That's all I can do. And I make my rock people, and Metro tears them down because they think it's bad for the water. It makes no sense.
Okay, thank you, Sylvia. And
there's no mycelium. I've told them there's no mycelium left. After you spray repeatedly with all those herbicides and pesticides, there's no mycelium left.
Okay, well, thank you for that call. It's Jessica?
Yeah, I mean, you bring up some really great points. One of the things that we're really promoting, and we're working directly with Beyond Toxics, a Eugene-based environmental organization, is something called Right to Know. And this really speaks to what you're talking about. We believe the Right to Know law is a central demand in terms of actualizing environmental justice. So, for example, everyone has a right to know what industry is using, how much of it is being emitted, and where does the hazardous material go. And the right to know can cover air, water, and waste. And right now it's I believe Kathleen Taylor and Rob Nose of Southeast Portland are going to promote this bill to go through the legislature because it's really important. We did have this law on the books at one time, but it has been slowly and systematically kind of, you know, the teeth have been taken out of it by industry. So that's something to be on, you know, to be really tracking. It's a great way to kind of do a material balance report so that we know exactly what our industry is using, what it's being used in, how they're disposing of the hazardous materials at the end. So keep on track with the Right to Know and Beyond Toxics. There's something to watch.
Thank you so much for your call. And I'm glad you're giving a shout out to the frogs and the wildlife in Johnson Creek. It's, you know, it's a treasure for this region. You know, I just want to make one point. We talk a lot about clean air, but we also have to keep in mind clean water. The air gets polluted wind blows, the air goes away, the pollution goes away a little bit. But the water remains contaminated for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And also the, you know, what goes into the air obviously comes down to the water eventually. Keep in mind, I want you to talk about this Cleaner Air Oregon Advisory Committee and the regulatory overhaul that might be in the works. But let's just go right to Michelle. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, I am a resident of the Ardenwald neighborhood here. And I had rented a space up at White Stag Building right next door to Precision Cast Parts back in 2003, I believe it was, and I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2005, and I went to the community meeting that they had over at the Monarch Hotel several months ago, and there were some attorneys there for people who might feel like they had a case, and part of my issue was that it had been 10 years and 7 months since I'd been diagnosed, and since it was like 7 months over the 10-year statute, I have no claim, which, you know, I just think is so unfair. And then I also was told that I'm outside the area of greatest effect for groundwater and also soil contamination. So I'm basically, you know, one of the residents in the area with no recourse.
I think there's a lot of us in that exact same position, and it's one of the reasons we need just full statewide overhaul. I'm really, really sorry to hear that.
Legally, I have no recourse here. And then everyone says, well, you can't prove where you got breast cancer anyway.
Well, that's the thing that the industries and governments always go back on, the, you know, this absolute scientific certainty. So, you know, I've been just in the 2 or 3 days I've been pulling the show together, I've heard of several people in your situation having cancers and live within, you know, near these sites. And obviously, you know, we know from, you know, going back to Lois Gibbs and all these struggles against toxic waste dumps or whatever, that how difficult it is to prove in a court of law. But the airwaves here are one place where we can at least talk about these things publicly, and this rally tonight is another place where people can talk, and there's people here in the studio with me and outside who are going to be at this rally who are actively working on this and actually, you know, hopefully making it so that fewer people will be in the circumstances you're in. Is about, you know, all I can say as a talk show's here on. So thank for the courage of calling up and you know, at least talking about this and working on this issue.
Yeah, I was wondering if you could just repeat the names of the gentleman you're interviewing. I was in my car and couldn't write it down.
Paul Koberstein and Greg Bourget and Jessica Applegate are my three guests.
Thank you.
And it's on the website if you do computers, kbo.fm under Wednesday Talk Radio. There's all the links and information you can get more. And thank you for calling. So let's just go to another caller who wants to remain anonymous if you're still on the line. Go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
Hi there. Yeah, I've got a little background in some of this stuff. I got a couple of chemistry degrees and worked in industry, worked for the government. And I've also done a lot of research on my own. Like Hanford's one area, I know something about radioactivity and such.
Well, we're talking about Portland air right now.
Well, the Columbia goes through Portland, and you know, Hanford's just upstream. So, if you're not interested, I won't say anything. But
well, no, go ahead. I mean, go ahead.
Just wanted to throw out a few random things I knew. The worker at Hanford had gone to eat an oyster that was at Astoria, and when he got back, he was so hot that he set off the detector from the oyster that he ate, you know, at the bottom of the Columbia. So there is the issue of possible radiation leakage coming downstream through the Columbia. It's just, you know, something to consider. If there is a major earthquake, Hanford's a major. The amount of radioactive waste stored there is just absolutely astronomical. It's kind of like the accident that recently happened in Japan. That's one thing. The other thing is there is a lot of interest with the Veterans Administration right now with toxins, and they've been addressing that with trying to take care of soldiers.
Okay, we're kind of straying. We got three guests who are talking about one specific topic here, and I appreciate your, you know, the issues that you're concerned about. But I think we respecting their time here, we need to keep focused on this one subject. But thank you so much for calling. You want to respond to that, Paul?
I just want to. I'm just really surprised that he brings up radioactivity, and that is actually a relevant issue. And with regard to precision cast parts, they have a long history of polluting Johnson Creek, as you know, and the sewers. And about 20, 30 years ago, they were using a radioactive substance in their process called thorium. And they actually used Portland sewers and Johnson Creek as a radioactive waste dump without a license, mind you, for a large quantity of radioactive material that went into the sewers, and it caused serious problems for the city. And they were fined, and they were cited for violating the law. That issue has been cleaned up, but there was at one point a lot of radiation in Portland sewers, all the way from Johnson Creek to Columbia Boulevard.
You know, we have some of the worst air because we have some of the worst regulation. Oregon has been behind the times with the environment historically. It's interesting that Trojan Nuclear Power Plant was shut down by a citizen action. People chained themselves into the plant. There was a suit against those people from the state, a prosecution, but they got the safety records of the plant subpoenaed. When that happened, they dropped the charges against those activists, and they never reopened Trojan. So Trojan was shut down by a citizen action. In fact, also the sewage dumping in the Willamette was also a citizen lawsuit that resulted in that $1.6 billion mitigation. We are a green population. We've been very effective with nuclear and also that sewage dumping. I think that we just found out about air pollution 6 months ago with Bullseye. But we have been active on environmental issues here in Portland. We've been very effective with the state. So luckily, we have less of a threat from nuclear because of our past history. And so now we have to step up on a new issue, it seems like, with air.
Well, let's go to Harry real quick. And then we want to hear from Jessica again on this, speaking of regulatory structure, the overhaul in the Cleaner Air Oregon Advisory Committee. Go ahead, Harry.
Okay, hey, thank you for taking my call. TriMet has a lot of buses running through the city, and you just mentioned about the diesel pollution by diesel by these buses. Is there any way TriMet's going to go to gas, natural gas buses, like they do in Boston? They had a demonstration, I think it was about 10 years ago, because all these buses in Boston was causing huge amounts of pollution.
I think Greg was more talking about trucks. I imagine TriMet buses must have filters on them.
TriMet buses are more progressive. The TriMet's been more thoughtful about not having unfiltered diesel. The problem that with the EPA told us, which was official at the National Emissions Inventory, is that the biggest contributor of diesel particulate in Portland is industrial short-haul trucks. We map them on our website. We got a information request from the Oregon Department of Transportation, and they sent us a list of every unfiltered truck in the state, which we've mapped out at portlandcleanair.org. And we have another information request happening soon. That'll be all government unfiltered trucks. But I don't think that TriMet is the worst offender. You know, they have soy diesel and all kinds of alternatives with their buses because they saw the writing on the wall.
Again, you got the same, you know, split personality or whatever it is in our culture. I mean, certainly government is both complicit and lax in oversight. But in Portland, you know, we do have fairly progressive policies. But, you know, we've got this, you know, private industry is able to just run unregulated seemingly. But so let's get into the regulatory what needs to happen at the level. So tell us about this. Have you had meetings yet with this advisory committee for Cleaner Air Oregon?
Well, the Cleaner Air Oregon is a long process that's going to take quite a while to do a regulatory overhaul for all stationary industry polluters. So it's really just covering that one aspect, unfortunately. It's not covering diesel or wood smoke. So what we are looking for is health-based standards, and that's huge. That's number one. And you know, when if you want to apply the precautionary principle, if you will, to this overhaul, and the woman that spoke before about cancer, one of the things we want to really push is we don't need to prove how sick we are. Industry needs to be proving how safe they are. And that is one of the things that we are going to be pushing for on the Cleaner Air Advisory Committee. Eastside Portland Air Coalition has been chosen to represent all the different grassroots and community organizations. And so we're going to be convening our spokes with all the grassroots just to make sure that all neighborhoods have their specific issues brought to the table when we go and participate on that committee.
How about the neighborhood organizations in Portland? Do they have any role in any of this?
Sure. We are working with all organizations in different forms. I mean, definitely there's a bigger group that's working together. It's been this really interesting way of organizing via network and kind of shared leadership, because a lot of legislators want us to have one voice. And I think what happens with grassroots, if you just assign one voice to make it easy for, I'm sorry, but lazy legislators or legislators who are really busy, you lose a lot of your kind of verve and power. So we're striking that balancing act of keeping individual grassroots voices, but also trying to make sure the diversity is really represented at that Cleaner Air Oregon.
Well, let's go to our next caller, Mitch, and then I want people just to think about what you hasn't been said yet, what needs to be said, and if you just have any real urgent thoughts that you want to leave with listeners. So go ahead, Mitch, if you're still on the line. Go ahead, you're on the air. I guess not.
Yes.
Oh, go ahead. Yep.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's just so striking to have your guests brought together in one place and for only, regrettably, 1 hour to discuss this, because it draws the contrast between the media organizations that have the resources to be covering this regularly, but the public interest is sublimated to the private profit interest. And so there are tons of business shows on the air that can cover Warren Buffett buying Precision Cast parts, but it would only be your guests and their journalistic independent backgrounds that would ask the questions about how much did Warren Buffett pay for the externalized environmental costs of polluting Johnson Creek? Where is the actual calculations? And where is the public discussion about what corporate responsibility is to the environment?
What's, you know, that brings in mind, you know, the other big glass plant in Northeast apparently has shut down or is shutting down because they can't, I guess they just can't put in, they don't have the finances to put in these filters. I mean, that gets...
Well, I think it's a, you know, they had an article out recently and there were several factors in Euroboros closing. And I mean, they couldn't afford seismic upgrades. They were worried about gentrification, apparently, in their neighborhood. There was, I believe the owner was close to retirement. So just to say, in fact, we've sometimes wondered if this whole thing hasn't been actually good for Bullseye in terms of the business, because now they are able to profit from this new open market share that's available for other glass companies closing down. So you have to look at the whole perspective.
So where are they at? Did I already ask you that? Where is Bullseye at with this putting a filter on?
So Bullseye has installed bag houses, is installing more. They had to replace their stacks because they found residual hexavalent chromium being released into the airshed just because of the residue that had accumulated. And DEQ is really closely watchdogging them. We are skeptical just because a lot of trust has been lost. So as citizens, we are staying actively involved, really tracking everything that we can.
So Mitch, sorry, I don't know where that came from, was the point I wanted to make, you know, is like, not that, it was basically like, not that it's good that Ouroboros closed, not that, you know, this was the, you know, determining factor, but the, you know, the issue of like, okay, you know, where, you know, who's going to clean up, who really does have the responsibility to clean up Johnson Creek, or who's going to force precision cast parts, you know, who's going to, if it's determined absolutely with scientific certainty that they toxified Johnson Creek, and, you know, do they have to shell out millions of dollars to clean up? Does Bullseye have to shell out millions of dollars for people who got cancer? Can I say on the air that possibly Bullseye contributed to them getting cancer? Of course, I can't say definitively. I'd be liable if I accused them of that. I don't know. These are difficult questions. But yeah, who's, you know, these companies are allowed to go unregulated for decades and contribute massive public health issues and just trauma.
Exactly.
Just trauma in the population. Who's, seriously, you know, should they be allowed to actually continue as a business? Mm-hmm. You know, if they, I think, you know, like I said, you know, after the BP spill, that, you know, they should basically like close up shop and use all their, the, you know, all whatever money they have in their, tied up in their firm to pay for everything. But obviously that's not the way it's going to go. But we have three more callers. Greg, you wanted to respond.
Yeah, there was a study by University of Amherst, Massachusetts. They looked at the national data for air polluters. They found that in their report that precision cast parts was the single biggest air polluter in the United States. So they looked at, they had plants across the United States, but they particularly noted the plant in Portland, the one in Johnson Creek, because of its proximity to a residential population. Well, Precision Cast Parts contacted them and argued the speciation of chromium, which in California they don't allow as a state. The professor of chemistry we talked to at Reed said, you never argue the speciation of chromium. He says that's in chemistry textbooks across the United States. He said that when chromium is being emitted, it's all hexavalent, even though some amount may be trivalent, which is safe. Well, they successfully argued that point with UMass Amherst. UMass Amherst downgraded them to the 20th biggest air polluter in the United States, which is their current rating. They really are liable. You know, there's a class action lawsuit against Precision, and they really should pay for the cleanup and people's health.
Well, let's we've got three more callers. We're not going to have time for all of you, but I think Jessica's next in queue. Hello?
Hello?
Go ahead. I guess you're not Jessica. Go ahead. You're on the air.
No, I'm Josh.
Josh.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of bring up, I'm out here in Clackamas County, but I grew up in Northeast. One of my concerns that I've noticed over the years, and I used to have to work down by ESCO, is I've noticed out here we've got Miles fiberglass, is it, in Oregon City. In the mornings I can smell the fiberglass that they were making during the night, and I've noticed that a lot of these big companies do their stuff at nighttime. Mm-hmm. When people are less likely to smell it or hear it, but when you go to work in the morning, instantly you smell it. Or if you drive down by ESCO, you get this taste of metallic in your mouth, if you know what I mean, kind of like you're chewing on tinfoil.
Okay, we're gonna have to leave it at that because. Okay, go ahead, make your final point.
Well, my concern is what do we do about that, and is Miles fiberglass a polluter in our area, and how would I go about finding out about it? Sorry, I joined the conversation a little bit halfway through, but I'm just wondering how I would go about finding out.
Okay,
exactly.
Thank you. And we can't bring in our last two callers. I'm sorry, we only have 2 minutes left. Greg, go ahead.
In response to the caller, my name is Greg Bourget. I work as the executive director of Portland Clean Air. Go to portlandcleanair.org and email me, and we have a team of volunteers to help you deal with the industries by your house so that you don't have to be Aaron Brockovich, you know, because you're living next to a dangerous polluter.
And that goes for anybody else listening who has a concern. And if you're on the southeast side, go to...
go to eastsideportlandair.org to our website, or you can find us on Facebook.
And Paul, you can find Paul Koberstein's writings both at CascadiaTimes.org.
Times.org.
Times.org, that's right, just Times.org.
Well, we got in there, really.
Got in there,
really. We got in there the first day of the internet. We got there on our website.
Good work. And also been writing for the Portland Tribune. That's about all the time we have. Once again, you can meet some of these people. I don't know if you're all going to be there at the rally. 5 to 6 p.m. at the Oregon Convention Center, Northeast MLK, just up north of Burnside. And the forum, 6 to 8 p.m., the public forum, the final statewide Cleaner Air Oregon public forum. And you can find all these links to all this stuff on at kboo.fm under Wednesday Talk Radio. Thank all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's it for today. This is Paul Rowland with Wednesday Talk Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Full Gallop, produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs through Saturday, October 8th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza in Portland. Full Gallop is a portrait of Diana Vreeland, who stood at the center of American style for 5 decades. As editor of Harper's Bazaar and Vogue magazines and as a member of the International Cafe Society, she chronicled the extraordinary people and events of her time. This play is a portrait of Vreeland at a turning point in her life. Again, that's Full Gallop, now through October 8th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, Sex and Broadcasting, will play Thursday, October 13th at 7 p.m. Sex and Broadcasting is a documentary about the revolutionary independent radio station WFMU and its station manager, Ken Friedman. The film explores the question of how to do interesting, cool, culturally significant radio and internet broadcasting while being a sustainable institution.
I just want there to be a WFMU. I want WFMU to exist as a place where people can go who